This is episode 192, recorded January 6th, 2014.
Greetings, Aquarimaxers everywhere.
Happy New Year. Again. Did I say that last time?
Yeah, but that's
You can
okay.
still have a Happy New Year. It doesn't only have to be a week long.
Traditionally, those greetings extend for some time after the actual day.
Okay. Guess what?
What?
This is really funny.
What?
I find it highly amusing.
What?
We have another Bob contributor. Not Dr. Bob from the North Shore of Boston, but we have another Bob from the South Shore of Boston. Yeah.
It is, in fact, the Bob in Boston who has contributed before. But
so,
now to distinguish them, because we have two Bobs in Boston, we need to use North Shore and South Shore.
So now it really does matter if I say North Shore, South Shore. So I find that amusing. And we have Sean in North Carolina, and Tom in Utah, and Mick in Carnforth, the one and only.
Mm-hmm.
And Dr. Bob on the North Shore, and Tony in New York.
Yeah. Oh, Matt should be in there, too. Matt in Perth, Western Australia.
I'm sorry, Matt. You got the... Matt, I'm adding you in. Plus Matt.
Yeah.
There we go. Happy mm-hmm. Matt. Okay. So, Bob from the South Shore, we'll call him South Shore Bob.
Yes.
He says, let Dr. Bob of the North Shore know that the Boston Aquarium Society meets at the New England Aquarium on the third Monday of each month at 8 p.m. And he sent the website that you can check for details. It's bostonaquariumsociety.org, and we can put that up for you. Email it to Dr. Bob
or
something.
We'll put it up on the site. Mm-hmm.
He says, so I guess we haven't heard from him in a while.
Right.
Right. So he says, glad you're still alive. How are you managing one podcast per week with four kids and a full-time job? Don't answer that. I'm just glad your kids don't do the podcast anymore. They are silly and wrong about everything, and you can tell them I said so. And if they do participate in the future, I'll be glad to show them how ridiculous they are and how smart I am.
Well, you have to see what he says next.
Okay.
Because he's, leading up to what he's going to say next.
Okay. He says, the last time I spoke to you, I killed 10 Altam angels from the Atabapo River in Venezuela. And he says, yes, Kelly, you did pronounce Atabapo correctly. In fact, it was better than correct. Bob from the South Shore of Boston is also psychic, apparently.
Well, he's referring to the original time when you pronounced it.
Oh, not to this time now that I didn't pronounce it right.
Right.
Okay. It took me a while to figure out why the Altams died, but once the dust settled, I realized it was ammonia. So, how does an experienced aquarist like myself succumb to a beginner mistake like ammonia? Well, I use rainwater, not tap water. Apparently, it's picking up ammonia from my roof, gutters, and or rain barrels, not sure which. It doesn't help that the colors in the test kit sold at Petco are indistinguishable from each other between the readings of 0 and 1.
No, that would make it a bit complicated. Mm-hmm.
To get rid of the ammonia, I stuff as much water Sprite into my tanks as possible. Water Sprite eats ammonia. And the water is now conditioned with zeolite and duckweed before adding it to the tank. I still use UV filters for the mycobacteria. Per Diana Wallstad's interview, I've since acquired two small Altams, which are doing fine.
Hmm. Sounds like a sensible way to get rid of the ammonia. Mm-hmm. Bioremediation. Well, biochemical remediation, because zeolite's a chemical process, and the duckweed and the water Sprite, biological.
Alrighty. He says, there's a guy in Western Massachusetts who keeps Altams and seems to know what he's doing. I've spoken to him and we're going to work together to breed them this summer. I will use my outdoor 500-gallon pond. It will be UV'd to death, heated at night, and filled with water Sprite and water hyacinth. I don't know what it is about being outside, but it's like waving a magic wand. I feel that way in the sun.
Do you?
Yeah.
Okay, yeah.
Call me water Sprite, I guess.
No, it's true, but I don't think...
You know, everybody feels better. You go out in the sun in the summer and you go,
Yeah, it's a nice thing.
Okay, anyways. I don't know what it is about being outside, but it's like waving a magic wand. The combination of sun, live food, oxygen, and space make things happen. If we succeed, we'll be the only people in America breeding them, as far as I know. Let me know if you want any babies, Russ.
I would love baby Altams.
In the meantime, I've had some success supplying my local fish retailers. I'm not turning a profit, but at least I can justify my expense. That's a lovely thing when your hobby pays for itself.
Mm-hmm.
The retailers like fish not supplied by the Florida farm, specifically rainwater dwarf cichlids, rams, certain angels, and discus. Discus take a year to get up to size and are not profitable, but I'll keep breeding them because they're so beautiful and fun to keep. Call me crazy, but I swear they talk to me. They seem to be highly intelligent.
Yeah, I've heard that about discus. I'd love to see that firsthand sometime.
I'm up to episode 185 and have come by your dreams about fish subject. I love the one about the fish taking over the house, swimming in and out of the rooms. I'm not Sigmund Freud, but maybe the hobby is out of control if you're having this dream. I don't know, maybe he'll have to catch up and listen to Tony's comments from last week about, what, you're out of room? Aquaria lad to the rescue.
There you go.
Yeah, okay. Questions about aquariums and science in general unfold in such a way that each answer leads to multiple questions. That's why people who started with 2 tanks now have 200. Yep. When confronted with multiple questions, you must decide which one is most important and discard the others. In this way, you are always cutting back just to remain the same size.
Yeah,
it's
true.
And now it's time for something less abstract before your listeners start zoning out.
I don't know. I was kind of getting into that.
Yeah, me too. It's a blessing to have a real scientist hosting an aquarium website. Anyone who's seen the classic The Lost Skeleton of Cadabra. Was I quoting that on the podcast?
Yes,
I probably was.
Huh? You have, yes.
I wonder also.
Well, I think he's talking about actual. You know, this could mean to science. It could mean actual
advances
in
the
field
of
science.
That's the best movie ever. Okay, anyone who's seen the classic The Lost Skeleton of Cadaver knows that scientists rule the world. He says, I caught it on TV one Saturday afternoon. Truly inspirational. Well, yes. The rest of you who haven't seen it?
You should. And at least, I don't know if I can claim to be a real scientist, but I think I have more claim to being a real scientist than the scientist in that movie did, since he was an actor.
Honey, I have more claim to being a real scientist than the guy in the movie, even if he weren't an actor, and that's pretty sad. So, yeah. Okay. And he says, and speaking of inspirational, I spoke to Jim Carmack last Monday, and he's excited about a stingray interview. And then you've got more contact information, which I won't read out loud on the air.
Right, but I've actually already sent him an email.
Oh, good. Yay.
Hoping we
stingrays.
Can set up that
I
stingray interview
rays.
In the next month or two.
Rays are beautiful.
They are.
They're like birds underwater, except less flighty. More swimmy.
Okay.
Sorry. Okay. Well, it's nice to hear from South Shore Bob
it
again.
It is. It's been a while. Mm-hmm. He's got some good stuff.
Honestly, I haven't listened to the kids' episodes, really. It was
usually gone, too.
So, what were they totally wrong about?
No, he's leading up to this about killing 10 Altum Angels and making a mistake.
Okay.
That's what he's leading up to, so, you know.
So, they're not wrong about everything.
You missed out on the irony of the situation.
I totally did.
Okay. Now, I gotta tell you, though.
I would
love to see that Altum breeding project outside.
Maybe they can make videos of it.
Yeah.
Make videos of it.
I mean, I've put fish outside before, and I've seen what happens when you put even just Daphne outside and how different it is.
Mm-hmm.
It's amazing.
It's because life belongs outside.
It is a
magic
wand.
We're too much in our houses. This is my tangent for the evening. I promise I'll try not to go on another tangent during the evening.
Oh, don't promise anything like that.
No, I said I promise I'll try.
Oh,
I didn't.
Okay. Okay.
Excuse me. Still getting over this cold. Our cat goes outside. That is our confession.
Okay.
Everybody always says, cats live longer if they're only indoors. They're safer, la 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 la. And I say, who cares if they're safer? They don't get to be a cat if they're just inside. I mean, if you live right in the middle of a downtown area in an apartment, fine. But cats want to go outside
and some
and
cats
be
more
a
than
cat.
Others. Our cat really hates being trapped inside.
Yes, he will eat our face if we don't let him inside. But okay, that's my totally non-relevant.
No, it is kind of relevant because Altum Angels are apparently somewhat similar.
Yeah, see, they got to feel the breeze in their fins.
Yeah. Something like that.
Maybe they chase bugs. You know, our cat goes out, he chases bugs. Maybe they chase bugs on the surface of the water. I don't know. Maybe they're really a cat in a former life. Maybe I should stop now. Okay.
I want to hear more about the Altum breeding project when it gets underway, though. That sounds really cool.
Yeah, you should talk the rest of the podcast, because I just totally proved that I should not be talking tonight.
Okay, well, keep going.
It's a good thing you guys love me anyways. Okay, so we're on Sean in North Carolina.
Mm-hmm.
He says, just listened to the most recent podcast. For some reason, it just downloaded today. That's that probably because we put it up late.
We did put it up late. My fault. Sorry about that.
He says, anywho, just poked around Google Plus, and it looks like you already have an Aquarmax account there.
Ah.
And I'm afraid I'm not up on all of my abbreviations, so I don't know what FWIW, for what it's worth.
Mm-hmm.
FWIW. I'd set up the hang out like an event on Google Plus.
Yeah,
I got the G Plus. Yeah, I figured out what that was. I'm not even on Google Plus.
Yeah, I think that's how we're probably gonna do it. It's a good idea.
I don't really text a lot, so I don't speak text.
Yeah.
Okay. It'd be fun to be a part of it. I'll see if I can come up with a question to ask. Not difficult. I just need to relax my mind for a bit. Is now an opportune moment? Speaking of Google Plus event hangout.
Sorry to say this.
For the opportune moment.
Yeah, that was it.
Yeah.
We're going to try to... We're still doing it, but we think we'll have to move it to February 8th. Same time, same channel. 7:30.
I messed up our calendar, and you have my apologies, because we were looking at the dates, and I hadn't written everything in yet, and we have a kind of important family event on February 1st that we have family coming in from out of town for, and so that wouldn't work very well, and I just...
We didn't see the calendar correctly. No. Sorry, folks.
I'm sorry, guys.
So February 8th, but 7:30 Mountain Time.
Mm-hmm.
So that's still going to be on. It'll just be one week later. And that's why we schedule them in advance, just in case something has to be moved, right?
Yes.
So hopefully that works out for everybody still.
Yes. He says, I think the video component could be fun. A show and tell segment from some of the callers could be neat. I've got enough time just to get a tank or two in shape.
And you know what's interesting? Both he and Matt suggested the same thing independently of each other.
Oh, well, there you go.
So that's what we're going
to
try to do.
That means we better have to do it then, huh?
And it doesn't mean that everyone who is doing it, who's participating, has to do the show and tell segment. It's just that those who are participating who want to do the show and tell segment can.
Yeah.
And then... think of one or two questions or comments to go with it, and that's it. It'll be cool.
It'll be good.
Then we'll have a show. Mm-hmm.
And he says, by the way, see, I got the BTW one. I knew that one was by the way.
Oh, but you got to say
whoops. He says, I've got some serendipitous white cloud fry now.
See, that would be fun to see those.
Yeah, that would be good.
Especially since white cloud fry, amazingly beautiful. They're incredible.
I think serendipitous is a good word for white cloud.
It is. Yeah. You know, they really are striking little baby fish. Mm-hmm. For fry, they're one of the most beautiful fry ever, really.
They actually look like something instead of just that generic silver fish color?
Well, the way they were first described to me was as blue sparks. And that's how they look when they're when they're small. They're very bright. They are comparable in brilliance to like neon tetras. That sort of iridescent like shine. That's really what they look like. Something like that when they're small.
That would be neat, then.
Unfortunately, they fade out a bit. They're still pretty when they get older, but they lose some of that brilliance. So it would be fun to see that.
Yeah, hopefully they'd show up on the video.
Mm-hmm.
It says, by the way, a possibly interesting story on Walter worms. I had a culture that didn't take off, and I just ignored it on the shelf among the others. I was just busy. Around 20 days later, it started churning out the worms. Pretty impressive latency.
It's true. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Have I mentioned on the podcast that time when... culture was inadvertently left out in the garage and then found later, and it was like a couple of months later, and it was still going.
What were they eating? Each other?
It's one of life's little mysteries, but it worked out.
Wow.
Crazy, huh?
Mm-hmm. Well, thank you, Sean.
Indeed, and we will look forward to the hangout with Sean on February 8th.
And now we've got Tom in Provo, in Utah. He He said, episode 191 was excellent as always, even if my contribution when read on the air sounded more contentious than I intended. Sorry, y'all.
I don't think it did, though.
No, I think you were fine. I didn't feel you were being contentious.
I didn't feel so either. It didn't seem like that. Didn't cross my mind at the time at all. Mm-hmm. So I think you're okay.
I think trying to get your fish into Harvard and Yale might be a little out of reach, though.
Well, perhaps.
But it didn't feel contentious. Says, I read the threads you linked to about possible toxicity of plant weights. I really don't see compelling evidence one way or the other, but enough experienced aquarists find reason to worry that I would be foolish to stubbornly continue to use them. Ms. Walstead even said, please don't use them. So out they go.
Okay.
See, please is the magic word.
Well, I can certainly see your desire for compelling evidence.
We could give your fish the SAT, or like the GMAT, the GRE.
I think that
And then give our fish that and see if there's a difference. I'm sorry. I'm not supposed to talk this show.
No, you're supposed to talk. It's fine. Okay.
You're giving me funny looks.
Am I?
Yeah.
That's a totally different reason. It's not related.
Oh, okay. It's like the
I got purple some cactus
I have on my head.
I got
head.
Some in my eye.
Okay. I was interested in Tony's question about the possibility of keeping only male guppies. At one point, I removed the guppies from my tank to avoid a population crisis, but missed one. He subsequently became infatuated with a female Molly, pursuing her relentlessly. I don't think she enjoyed his attentions, but who really knows? Do I understand correctly that guppies and mollies do not hybridize?
My understanding, and I have to check on this, so don't take this as, you know, 100% true, but I do know that some of the live bears can hybridize. For example, guppies and swordtails, I know that they can.
Mm-hmm.
I believe
guppies and swordtails?
Guppies and swordtails.
This just seems like there's such a size difference.
Right, but you get a young swordtail female that can be impregnated by an adult male guppy and store, you know, eight broods worth of sperm.
That's so weird.
As she grows up and use them, for example. But it seems to me that I read, and this was a long time ago, that the resultant hybrids are prone to cancer.
Mm.
Okay.
Between
guppies and swordtails. I believe that some mollies can hybridize with guppies as well, but I don't believe the hybrids ever occur if there are female guppies, because the male guppy will always choose the female guppies if they're available, but if they're not, hybrids can sometimes occur, is my understanding. I don't have any personal experience with it.
So you're saying you can have a female molly and a male guppy, but not a female guppy and a male molly? Is that what you said?
No, that's not exactly what I said, or at least not what I meant to say.
I probably just misunderstood you.
No, that's...
Say it again!
That you have to have... You can only have the fish in such a situation where there is only one available partner and it is of the other species. If it has available partners of its own species, they will not hybridize.
So, like, this kind of situation that he's talking about where he had one male guppy in there with them all.
Yeah, and I don't think they will always hybridize in that case, but I think it is technically possible.
I'm having trouble picturing what that would look like.
Me too.
That would be really weird.
It could be wrong. It seems to me...
Are we talking fancy guppies or what? When I say guppy, I always think of, like, wild-type guppies.
I don't think it really matters.
They're
the same
one.
Species, so it doesn't matter. But, yeah, it's interesting thing to think about. Of course, mollies themselves are several different species going in there, and one of them, at least, does not, when it mates with closely related species, and the mating only serves to stimulate the development of the eggs without actually contributing genetic material to them.
So the female contributes all the genetic material to the eggs?
Yes, the male merely contributes the stimulus for the eggs to develop. It's like parthenogenesis.
But it does
not
need a partner.
It's not parthenogenesis, because parthenogenesis literally means
virgin
birth.
It doesn't need a
basically.
Partner at all.
Right, it's virgin birth, literally.
Mm-hmm.
And that it's, of course, if there's mating taking place, it's not a virgin birth. But it's allied to it in the sense that the female is contributing all the genetic material.
That is so odd.
Yeah.
What did you say did that?
One of the species of mollies.
Which one?
I can't remember. There are several out there. There are quite a few.
Fish are so weird.
They're always redoing things. So, but
so many
mollies
different...
are kind of like swordtails and plaidies in that they're the ones you see in the store are probably descended from several different species.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, so.
Species of mollies?
Species of mollies, yes.
Okay. So, like, what counts as a species of molly? Because, like, a lyre tail, that's just a type, right?
It's a variety. Cultivated variety that's probably descended from more than one species. And
so species would be like, this kind comes from this place and this.
If you go out in the wild and you could collect, and they may have changed the name, but Poecilia vilifera, the sailfin molly, and there's Poecilia sphenops, and there are other Latipinna. There are several species out there.
What makes them different from each other? Is it just geography, or do they have different anatomy?
Complicated.
That's my favorite taxonomy subject, huh?
Right, but. Yeah, it's probably beyond the scope of this podcast for the evening, but that is my understanding, and if anybody has any direct, some information that can contradict it, that would be lovely, or confirm it.
Okay. Tom goes on, you mentioned in podcast 187, I think, that you were considering Odessa barbs. At Thanksgiving, I visited a local fish store in Portland, Oregon that had an entire tank of them. They were amazing, and I rarely resort to exclamation points. Exclamation point. I hope you find room for some at your place.
I do, too.
We tried.
We wanted to, and we still want to. I eventually want to get Odessa barbs because I'm absolutely smitten with them in terms of, as much as one can be smitten by a fish. They're amazing. Kelly likes them, too.
I have a friend named Odessa who's also beautiful, and so they made me think of her.
So there you go. It would be perfect. So someday we will get them.
Pick a fish, but.
We can't do it now, but we will. Sometime.
Well, we were having trouble finding them around here,
too. They're difficult to find. You can find them online, but they are a bit expensive.
I don't like ordering fish online if we can help it.
It can be a little bit tricky, because generally what happens is they get delivered when I'm not here, and then Kelly has to try to acclimate them. That can be stressful.
Well, now we have this thing in this house where there's two different porches.
Right, and delivery can be.
Neither one of them is really the front. They're like both on the sides, and so nobody knows where to go, and they don't necessarily knock on the door when they leave a package. And
right. So we'll see. Something for the future, because I agree with
they
you.
They
beautiful. Are amazing fish.
I want some. He says, by the way, the store at which I saw the Odessa barbs, the wet spot, is itself amazing. Many long rows of well-cared-for tanks, mostly fresh water. When my wife saw some of their displays, I think she understood for the first time, really, what I am trying, still not very successfully, to achieve with my planted tank.
Sounds like a fun store.
Yep, and he put their website, he sent their website, they have a lot of pictures and stuff.
Wetspottropicalfish.com.
Yep.
Yeah, mm-hmm. We should check that out.
Beatus est piscicus.
Oh, he points out that his comments are completely unsolicited and unremunerated. Which I have to say for two reasons. One is because it's good to include the disclaimer.
Whoever uses the word unremunerated,
Unremunerated. Well, you remember in Mary Poppins when Bob is singing at the beginning, he says, no remuneration would I ask of you, but me cap would be glad of a copper or two.
Bravo.
So he does
so
use
it's,
the
it's
same root word,
that just
but
because
he's got that prefix there.
I know.
Nice prefix.
It's pretty awesome.
Yeah. So, and okay. I, of course, I love Beatus Est Piscicus.
Yeah, that sounded pretty good song there.
Did
you?
It?
Yeah. We got to redeem ourselves after the.
Well, when we both had like laryngitis and we tried to sing, that was ridiculous.
We tried to sing the Surface Area song.
Yes.
Yeah. And it was in the wrong key. Okay. Thank you, Tom. Okay, we have Mick in Carnforth, and he says, hi, Russ and Kelly, and a very happy new year to you and Aquarimaxers everywhere. Thank you, Mick. Same to you. He says, I have put on a couple of links to an amazing Amazon display we saw on my birthday trip to Chester Zoo. Also a link of the axolotls, which have now hatched and started feeding. Oh, yay! I want to see them.
Me too.
I haven't seen it yet.
I haven't seen this yet either. And you know what? I forgot to put his photos up on the last episode of his Axie eggs.
Well, we need to catch up
then. That. And I can put them on this one and put the video on.
Yes, there we go.
So you and I need to check out these videos right after the podcast because I haven't had a chance to do it yet.
I like axolotls. In fact, our youngest daughter, Gwen, what's the magazine officially called?
It's called Reptiles.
Just Reptiles.
Yep.
It's not like Reptiles USA or something.
I think it's just Reptiles.
Just Reptiles magazine. They're having like a kid art contest for drawing reptiles and amphibians, and she wanted to draw an axolotl for it.
Mm-hmm. So she was drawing one the other day.
She thought they were pretty cool.
They are cool.
I think they're cool.
And if you've ever seen the movie How to Train Your Dragon?
Oh, yes.
That dragon's face, it's got to be based on an axolotl. It's
based on an axolotl. Because
it has external gills and everything. Mm-hmm. I mean, okay, anyway.
Okay.
And so we'll check out both those videos when we put them on the show page.
He says, on the subject of temperate fishes, I have dedicated a whole section at the shop to fish which can be kept at room temperature, partly to try to offset the old tradition of cramming too many goldfish into tiny tanks, and to give people ideas on unheated aquariums which can often look tropical. There are paradise, as Russ mentioned, many danios and rasboras, gararufa, even many barbs can be kept at 15 degrees Celsius, as can many live bearers. Nerite snails are very good at algae control in unheated aquariums, but they tend to work a touch slower, so I suggest adding a couple of extras to get the job done. So there's some more good
suggestions.
Who was asking again? I don't remember.
Well, Tony was wondering about it.
Oh, Tony was wondering about it. Okay. On the subject of prepared foods for fry, the first bites are quite good, but I use golden pearls. There are several grades. I have recently used it as a first food on Epistogramma fry and betas with good results, and here are a couple of links.
And you know what's funny? We live about an hour away from Brine Shrimp Direct, which is the company that produces those, and I had them ship some to me.
Yeah.
I liked them. Yeah, they were good. I used them with, rainbow fish and danios? Celestial pearl danios, was it? Or was it just celestial pearl danios?
I don't remember.
I don't know, but the celestial pearl danios really went nuts for him, and it worked
well. They liked him.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And he put up those links, so we can put those up, too. So we need to put up the Axie egg pictures and the video and
the links.
The links, yes.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So thank you, Mick. Okay, now we have...
Oh, and he's going to join in.
Oh, yes.
Hopefully.
Hopefully that still works. Now we have Dr. Bob on the North Shore. And other than Matt, he's our last one. So look, our podcast is kind of chiasmatic today.
Oh, I think there might be a couple more that I just didn't put on right.
Oh, well.
Sorry.
Now I want to do Dr. Bob last so we can have some chiasmus. Can I do that? Is that okay? We got to, because if we're going to start with South Shore Bob and end with North Shore Bob.
Well, you're in charge of that part because you're holding the iPad. So.
I have the power. Okay. So we're on Tony.
Okay.
In New York. He says, thanks very much for episode 191. First, I'm looking forward to joining you on February 1st for the community event. Hopefully, you can still join us on February 8th.
Yes.
Okay. So. Second, you were wondering if nerite snails would eat killifish eggs. My comment here, probably. However, I don't think zebra nerites or olive nerites would be able to climb into the Java moss where gardenieri lay their eggs. This is the advantage of breeding plant spawners. So, yes, go ahead and keep your nerites in a spare tank to keep it cycled if you do the two-tank strategy I mentioned in episode 199. 191, sorry. We haven't gotten in 199 yet.
Mm-hmm.
One proviso. I believe that the horned nerite is able to climb into Java moss or into spawning mops, for that matter. The horned nerite is a much smaller snail. That's my New York Minute.
Okay, thank you.
Did we have a Matt thing?
We do have a Matt thing that I have
but
to pull up.
But you need to comment on
stuff. Yes, I need to comment on Tony's first. And one thing I wanted to say, that does make a lot of sense, although I think I've occasionally seen my olive nerites make it into the Java moss if I have a tank that has a lot of it in it.
That's really all over the place? They kind of
slide off
it?
Of the glass and onto the Java moss. So I guess it would depend on placement. Maybe if you have a mound that isn't in contact with the glass...
It's kind of in the middle.
Well, that's some good information, though. So, thank you. And this is what Matt says. He is he confirmed that February 1st would work, and then, of course, we had I've sent him an email since then. It's okay. I've sent him an email since then, hoping that it will work out. So, we're sending email addresses along of those who indicate their willingness to enter, as we've mentioned in the last one. If you communicate your willingness to participate, we will send your email address to Matt so he can get things working. And he said, even if you don't have a mic or a webcam, you can instant message during the Hangout, and those will show up on the side, and we can...
Do they need to have a Google Plus account, though, right?
I think they do need to have a Google account. And if they have a Google account, a Gmail account, you know, whatever... that all works the same way. It's all part of it.
Okay.
So that would allow them to participate. Okay. And they can participate. We'll be able to see their comments on the side. And so they will be
like
participatory.
Like an iMessage-y looking kind
of
thing.
Yes, an instant message thing. And he's going to look into how everybody's recording. If a lot of times tablets or mobiles will work. You know, a lot of them are set up so that they can just participate directly in a Google Hangout with their camera.
Okay.
And their microphone. And he's saying if they're using those, or they can show their setups, like Sean was talking about, do the little bit of show and tell about one of your tanks.
Oh, okay.
And then saying one thing to remember is a basic thing, just record a brief video using your webcam to make sure your mics and visuals are working.
Shortly before
the hangout, you know, within a week or so, it would be a good idea. And then you can troubleshoot.
Sound check.
If needed, yeah. That would be kind of important. And let's see. Yeah, I think about where we is. Where we is. That was funny.
Where we is.
That's about where it is for now on that. Okay. So thank you, Matt, and we're looking forward to it. And now
we appreciate the technical assistance.
We do indeed.
And okay, now we can be kismatic and end with Dr. Bob of the North Shore.
Okay.
Okay. He says, New Year's greetings. Thank you for the help on acclimating fishes from other areas. I will try the idea of setting up a fresh tank and cycle it without pond tank water. Then I will see if new acquisitions fare better in a relatively neutral tank prior to introducing them to my pond tank water. To Tony's question about cool water fishes, you are right that native species are a great choice, but the issues are the same as choosing any aquarium fish, the fully grown size of the fish and compatibility with others in the tank. Here's a link to a native fish retailer that gives relative size and compatibility of quite a number of American native fishers.
And this is jonasaquarium.com. Mm-hmm. And we'll put the full link
because it's got a few other /messes.
Yeah, but we'll put that up on the show page.
Okay. I have 6 tanks with only one heated, the beta tank. One 40-gallon tank is a tide pool tank with locally caught minnows. He says moomichogs?
That sounds good to me. I'm not sure. I haven't heard
it. Is that the kind of minnow? Or?
Yeah.
Okay. Crabs and grass shrimp. My 55-gallon tank has local sunfish, blue-spotted, black-striped, and banded, and they all stay under 4 inches. This tank has a black sand gravel and substrate, black sand and gravel substrate with logs and planted with hornwort. There are a couple of pond snails, and I recently added a couple of American flagfish to help with algae control. I had some whisker shrimp in the tank, but I think they became fish food.
Nothing is more probable.
Mm-hmm. The remaining tanks are for acclimation isolation and fry/juveniles.
That was a quote, too, but I won't say what it's from.
What is it from?
I can't say.
Give me another one.
I can't.
Oh, come on.
Yeah, sorry. Okay.
Other species that will do well in unheated aquaria are white cloud minnows and paradise fish. Russ mentioned these. Least killifish, not really a killie, but a native guppy.
I've kept those. They're fun. They're also called eastern mosquito fish.
Oh, okay.
Heterandria formosa is the scientific name, I believe.
Or was something about last their time forehead? I checked.
No, actually, formosa means like beautiful.
There must be something else with a formosa in it had something to do with its forehead.
Frontosa?
Maybe that's what I'm thinking of.
That's what you're thinking of, probably.
Okay. Most mollies, pleiades, and swordtails can tolerate mid-60s temperatures. Dodo loach, or a.k.a. weather or pond loach.
Oh, yeah, that's a great one.
You used to have some of those when you were a kid, and you loved
those.
Them.
They were very... so endearing.
Had large personalities.
Yeah.
Many have said that several species of tetrabarb and danio will tolerate unheated aquaria. However, I have no experience there.
I do have a bit there.
Excuse me.
Several danios do well. I mean, celestial pearl danios are great in cool tanks. They like it in the low 70s. They don't breed as much.
His basement's in the 50s, though.
That might be a little cold for celestial pearl danios, but I know that zebra danios can be fine in the 60s, too.
Well,
perhaps lower. And as far as barbs go, I have limited experience with barbs. I've only kept a couple of species, so I don't know.
Okay.
But I've heard that, too.
Okay. One of the great advantages of keeping local natives is that power losses no longer cause panic, as my locals can tolerate temperatures right down to freezing. That's nice.
It is.
I only need a battery-operated air pump to keep the fish happy. Another is that you can build a pond and keep them outdoors, too. I'm considering building a pond this year for spawning locals. No more room for tanks? Build a pond. I'd love to build a pond.
No, we will someday.
We will. I want a koi pond. I want a great big koi pond with a bridge going over it so you can sit on the bridge and watch the koi and feed them treats.
Like the one in the airport in Honolulu?
Yes. That's or at the Buddhist temple.
The Buddhist temple. What is it called? The Valley of the Temples?
Valley of the Kings, I thought.
Oh, is it?
No, Valley of the Kings is in Egypt. Sorry.
I think it's Valley of the Temples. Valley of the Temples. Something like that.
It was really pretty. Those were fat koi.
Some of them were rather overweight because you could feed them there. You'd buy food and people would obviously do it to excess.
Some of them were almost pine coned out like dropsy because they were so fat their scales were sticking
out. And not all of them were that bad, but many of them were very, very obese.
But the temple and the pond in it was beautiful. And they had these gorgeous black swans.
Mm-hmm.
And
it's a great place. If you're ever near, if you're on Oahu near Kaneohe, it's worth a visit. I mean,
better than the beach.
Picturesque anyway because of all the beautiful landscape. And it's a big network of ponds. It's not just one pond.
The whole place goes around almost the whole
network of ponds.
Temple.
It's really fun.
It's really pretty.
We should see if we have any video of that. We can post some.
I don't remember if we have video. We have some pictures.
Do we have photos? Is that all we've got?
Somewhere.
Anyway.
Yeah.
Very nice.
Okay, sorry, I went on a tangent again.
Well, it was about ponds. It was related to what Dr. Bob was talking about. So.
Okay, there we go.
I think that's about it for this episode.
I think that's all we've got today, yes.
So, think February 8th. Keep your fingers crossed, but it should be fine, hopefully. And may the fish
be with you.